The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Bengals beat writers, fantasy football failure Fletcher Page and Paul Dana Jr. take you inside Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It is the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by your good friends at 50 West Brewing Company, selling delicious beers, local Cincinnati beers. I saw my man, Optimistic Bobby, out running in the snow as part of the 50 West running groups they got going on now, because they're doing 50 West running groups and training for marathons. And I saw a snow-covered Optimistic Bobby beard, I believe about to drink a beer after his run.
Still as optimistic as ever.
By the way, Optimistic Bobby coming very soon to the BBP.
Excellent.
As soon as we get the Zach Taylor thing official, or I could just have him on anyway, maybe next week. Optimistic, you got to feel he thinks this is a great move.
I bet so.
There's no doubt about it in my mind. Remember, go out to 50 West Brewing Company. Delicious beers all the time. And good times. And keeping you active. Do you need a run? Are you a snow runner?
No,
yeah. I'm not a snow runner.
Not unless something's chasing me.
Yeah, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. Lot going on in Bengals world, of course. We had the emergency BBP on Friday night, essentially serving as like a miniature version of the deuce or the walkout with no game. It was maybe the biggest game of the year. The Bengals landing on Zach Taylor. I've been using the word pegged. Like, we have to be careful in our language, right? In how we phrase this, because technically, of course, he's not the coach yet. Technically, of course, we have to wait until the postseason. So, like, look to front runner.
Potential
head coach, soon to be pegged. Someone pointed out that pegged was aggressive.
Well, I think it has a few different meanings on the dark web.
You say we shouldn't Urban Dictionary that?
Don't Google that phrase.
Don't Google that phrase. There's a lot happening. The emergency BBP was up sort of when everything broke from last Thursday night, but more of a better feel and a bigger picture look at where everything is at right now. So we're going to dive into that. I've got some good reaction and some insight into sort of who Zach Taylor is from some people that really knew him best at UC, people that worked with him every single day. Moeller football head coach Doug Rosfeld, who at the time was a director of player development, essentially, that worked very closely with Zach Taylor. Vince Seriano, who was like the quarterback's coach for him. And so I was in every single meeting that Zach Taylor had at UC and talked a little bit, not about X's and O's and stuff like that, but sort of who he is as a guy that knows how to connect to people and maybe personality and things like that. So really interesting stuff. So we're going to get to that. Andy Benoit, who works for MMQB and wrote a great story in December calling Zach and Press Taylor NFL coaching's next big thing.
Mighty prescient of him.
Prescient? Look at you.
Dropping it.
That was sort of a little double there.
Kind of elitist sounding. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But so, you know, a great read. If you have not read that yet, I highly recommend it. He was very much ahead of the curve on this whole story, and a lot of good background into Zach Taylor and his brother Press, who is a quarterback's coach in Philadelphia. Anyway, so we're going to talk to him, who's been on this podcast before, a good close friend of the pod. Always love talking to Andy. And we'll take some of your questions. You have them. There are many. So we will do that. And, of course, we have to check in on what's going on today in Kanye. I'm sure there's something.
I've got ridiculous. Something loaded here in the chamber.
All right. So let's dive in. Let's just dive into where we're at, right? So right now, where it stands, Zach Taylor's the guy. And if there's any – we should really get this out of the way first. I mean, if there's any thought that, is that really – Yes, Zach Taylor will be the next head coach of the Bengals. That is the thing. People are very aware of the rules, and the NFL sets where you cannot be making offers and things like that, and making someone your head coach until their postseason is over. The LA Rams win on Saturday night against the Dallas Cowboys, so their postseason is not over. So that will continue to roll on. We will continue to peg and look to and soon to be and potential Zach Taylor all we want. He's the next head coach. He's taking this job. The Bengals are giving it to him. He's the next head coach of the Bengals.
Yeah, unless he pulls a McDaniels.
Right. That when you have – you've worked in the world of verbals.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There's a soft verbal. Is there anything but a soft verbal?
It's kind of like saying somebody's day-to-day. If you verbal, that's not really binding. It's not binding at all.
It's not binding at all. There's nothing to bind you.
All right.
But is there a hard verbal?
There are stronger verbals than others.
what would make a verbal hard versus soft?
AJ Green was a hard verbal when he committed to Georgia. But if you're still taking visits, though, you're not married yet.
Yeah, no doubt.
You're still dating.
No, that's one hell of a bachelor party.
That's right.
So let's. I would call this a hard verbal.
This is a hard verbal.
Hard verbal is what I would call this. You know, when staff starts getting fired and things like that, you know. So speaking of, the staffing thing has kind of cleared itself. I would say basically where you would think it would go with Zach Taylor being the guy, it went. Bill Lazor is out. Hugh Jackson is out. You have Jim Haslett, the linebackers coach, is out. Jonathan Hayes, the tight ends coach, is out. Running backs coach Kyle Kasky is out. So that's kind of your – we said it was going to be about a half and half as far as position coaches go. That looks like that's how it's going to break. Jacob Burney, the defensive line coach, sounds like he's mulling retirement and may retire after this. You know, he's in hitting 60 and he's been around the league forever. You know, looks like they'll be replacing him in some capacity, whether he leaves by his own volition or not. So as far as those go, I mean, did anything strike you weird there with that?
No, I don't think so. I think you've got to clear the way for this new offense that's going to be coming in here. So, you know, Bill and Hugh going, not a surprise. I thought that it was obvious that Darren Simmons would be kind of the institutional knowledge guy that you'd want to keep.
Yep.
Plus special teams have been, for the most part, a strength. Also, some of the defensive guys they kept, Livingston, I thought was a no-brainer the way the safeties have played. So just kind of getting some of those guys out of there that I think we expected. I didn't see any surprises so far.
Yeah, Frank Pollock has done so well on the offensive line, so expectations of him being back. Important to note here in that these guys did – so there was the 2 days with the meetings of these guys that were let go, okay? Nothing is for sure for anybody until I would say Zach Taylor is in here and the whole staff fills out and they're basically presented because there's going to be new coordinators and I think there's always still the thought of needing to survive a second wave, even though it's sort of been put in place. These guys seem to be safe, but I always am a little hesitant until you officially get that in there to see it. But yes, that seems like that is the way – it's been set up and agreed to. You can't keep Hugh Jackson around. For anybody that was like wondering, oh, I would take him as an offensive coordinator, you just can't. His personality, and his connection to Marvin Lewis, you can't. That's it'd be unfair to Zach Taylor, a guy already trying to establish himself, to have someone with as strong of a personality as Hugh Jackson hanging around the building in any capacity. So to me, that was a no-brainer. But I think a lot of people did ask that. A lot of people were wondering if there was a chance that Hugh would stick around and help out. And I don't think either side had interest in that.
Yeah, I think if they would have hired maybe Vance Joseph, maybe we could be talking about that. But that didn't work out.
So. Yeah, potentially. I mean, and Hugh wanted the job. And that's sort of the other thing in this is
Vance Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, it's Hugh Jackson and Vance Joseph. These guys that wanted the job, that went for the job, when you don't get it to come in and, like, work for this other guy, especially when he's a 35-year-old hotshot. I'm not saying he is a hotshot from personality-wise, but, you know, somebody else, you pick somebody else, and you want me to come in and help this other guy. Especially Hugh and Vance were sort of inside outsiders. I mean, Hugh just came here for a few weeks, and Vance was the head coach of the Broncos, so they have, you know, it's a little odd to ask them to do that. The Vance Joseph thing is interesting. I do feel like him choosing, he ends up landing in Arizona as defensive coordinator for Cliff Kingsbury, was a blow to this team. I think they thought they could get Vance to come and be defensive coordinator for Zach Taylor, and him choosing Arizona, he had an offer from the Jets. Other teams were, I mean, the Browns were in on him. Him choosing to go elsewhere, I think it rattles their plans a little bit.
Yeah, I think he made some sense as a defensive coordinator, and it kind of leaves at least me right now kind of thinking, where are they going to go with this hire at DC? I think with having a 35-year-old coach, it would be maybe wise to bring in a veteran DC that can maybe help him establish culture on the other side of the ball. So I'm interested in how they handle OC and DC jobs.
Yeah, it's the question of the week, and it's the big question going forward now. As everyone across the league now starts to fill these out, what do you know? You're now this is kind of the real musical chairs. They ended up not really in a game of musical chairs with their head coaches that they interviewed, because the ones they were choosing from, none of them ended up landing anywhere else.
They got their top choice.
They got their top choice, so to speak. We have to assume that, because nobody, you know, Eric Bieniemy didn't get a job anywhere else, and all the rest of the guys they talked to. So the real musical chairs is with these coordinators, and the thought is, well, if you don't have Zach Taylor official, yeah, but I think they know who they want to peg, and they can go. It's not like they can't start going after coordinators. I mean, they're going to hire coordinators with the understanding of Zach Taylor being the head coach. But, you know, who are they going to get? And the obvious setup, the McVay, is you have the young head coach, and that's fine, who's got the offensive side. Well, you need the grizzled NFL veteran guy on the defensive side who has some head coaching experience. That is the template that everyone is trying to duplicate now. And you see with the Vance Joseph showing up in Arizona, and Cleveland, Freddie Kitchens, as Steve Wilks shows up, who was the had just been named head coach. It was previously in Arizona for a year. He takes over as defensive coordinator. He was a longtime defensive coordinator with the Panthers. You know, we know this setup. We know what teams are trying to do. But those names are now falling off a little bit.
And we know that Greg Williams has so many offers probably.
And it won't be here.
Just so many jobs.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. From. Letters, just upon letters, just offering Flowing him jobs. In. Well, and Greg Williams, you know, looks like he's now landing with the Jets. So you get, I mean, there are only so many of those guys. And so honestly, I don't really know where this is going
to
land.
Yeah, I feel it would be hard for me to right now speculate about what they're going to do. I have an idea in my head of the maybe the traits and tendencies of a defensive coordinator that they would like to have. I just don't have a name for that yet.
Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, on the offensive side of the ball, you know, there's been a lot of talk. Okay, will Press Taylor come and join Zach? And at first blush, my first gut reaction was, of course he would. I would be shocked that he wouldn't. These two brothers, a chance to work together. Your brother's got a head job. You're 30. You're up and coming as well. What a great opportunity. Now, as it's evolved, you know, it seems like that might not be the way that this is going to go. And you see this across, like, just because your brother has a job doesn't mean – we saw this with LaFleur's brother now in Green Bay, where, you know, his brother was blocked by San Francisco, who has this whole – they have a whole team of these young Mensa NFL guys now over there in San Francisco that they're all blocking, including Mike McDaniel and all these guys. And so it's – look, it needs to be a step up or Philadelphia can tell him, hey, you can't go. And it does not appear to me that they're targeting to go young and let the kids play on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I do think that the Denver's move to block Gary Kubiak kind of created a chain reaction that I'm curious to see what the end result will be.
Well, he's free now, so it's like, okay. Well, so now that Gary Kubiak is let free, it gets interesting because the people clearly were chasing him.
I was going to say that he was the Falcons' top choice, and I think that they would have loved to have hired him. And so that blockage has led to now him being free, and they've already filled their spot. And as you said, a lot of these teams are. So where Gary Kubiak ends up will be because of Denver blocking him initially.
The Bengals were pursuing Gary Kubiak, but we are left to wonder how much of that pursuit was connected with Vance Joseph's chase of the job. Was that going to be a Broncos 1-2 punch of Vance Joseph and Gary Kubiak coming over and taking the reins? Would Gary Kubiak want to be a part of a guy like Zach Taylor's system and be an OC under him? I get the impression that that's going to be in play. They're chasing some veteran offensive coordinators and trying to get a few more veteran guys to help establish culture and fill in the blanks that Zach Taylor doesn't have just because of his lack of experience.
Yeah, and that would be fun for me to see. You've got this young, bright offensive mind in Zach Taylor. You assume it's going to be his offense, but if you were to mix him, put him in a room with Gary Kubiak and say, come up with the offense, the playbook, the philosophy, I'd like to see what those two could do together.
Yeah. Another name thrown around is Daryl Bevel. I think Albert Breer had that report, who's a longtime coordinator. I mean, he won a Super Bowl and was part of those Seattle teams and developed Russell Wilson, who's an OC for them from 11 to 17, I believe. So, yes, he was responsible for throwing the ball from the 1 yard line against the Patriots. However, he also got them there. And I think that, you know, what you saw him do, and there's some dedication to the running game stuff there in Seattle, that where they rode Marshawn Lynch for all those years and let all that be part of how their offense worked. There's some stuff that really connects to the Bengals. So certainly that report makes sense. You know, the type of guy that we're seeing in the coordinator chatter, I think, gives you an idea of where they want this to land, that they maybe don't want their head coach and coordinator to be a combined 65 years old.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's fun to think about just throwing it over to the Taylor kids and letting them run wild with the offense.
Yeah, let the kids play. Right. Let the kids play. All right, so I'm really curious to see. That is the big thing sitting out here right now. If you're wondering what's next, well, outside of the Rams needing to end their season, the big thing is, where do these coordinators go? And that's what we'll be tracking. So make sure you keep it locked to Cincinnati.com. Make sure you have our Inquirer Bengals app, because we'll buzz you in your pocket as soon as we have news or insight into what's going on in those searches. I wanna twist it forward a little bit, because we're still answering the question, who is Zach Taylor, a little bit. You know, people really, I don't know they necessarily have the full idea, and just to bioblast, right? Like, we can go ahead and do a, but I mean, look, he's 35 years old. He's been seen as sort of a brilliant young offensive mind, and he, it was only 3 years ago he was an OC for Tubbs. He was an interim offensive coordinator after Bill Lazor left, ironically, in 2015 in Miami. And then after his year with Tuberville, as the whole staff got wiped out, he ends up on Sean McVay's staff for 2 years, overseeing quarterbacks in the passing game and some receiver stuff, and helped kind of develop the receiver room there as well. And all that's great. He clearly understands the game. Brilliant football mind is the first thing that comes out of almost everybody's mouth when you talk to anybody about Zach Taylor. I don't think everyone's in agreement that his future is incredibly bright. Everyone's also in agreement that he probably was a few years away from what you would normally see. I've been asked a lot, what is a comparison? Are there examples of it working where you go from just a position coach and skip over coordinator? And there is, the big one being actually 20 years ago, Andy Reid went from Brett Favre's quarterbacks coach to head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. And now his tree has branches all in the playoffs every single year. The likes of John Harbaugh, Matt Nagy, Doug Peterson, Ron Rivera. I mean, the Andy Reid tree is known and all over the place. There are many examples of it not working. So we're not going to claim that clearly he's Andy Reid, but people that have asked for an example of it working, that is a very prominent one.
Yeah, and there's also examples, and maybe not this exactly what you're talking about with a position coach going, but a young coach. There's examples of them striking out in their first gig and then coming back strong, maybe like the first Shanahan.
Right, Mike Shanahan, yeah.
Yeah, Mike Shanahan would be a good example of somebody that a lot of this might have to do with where you turned up in that first gig, too. So
yeah, I wrote about boom or bust young coaches and just doing some very simple research of the 10 youngest coaches in the recent NFL that were hired and what happened, right? What happened there? And I find it interesting because if you look just across all coaches, sure, of course, everyone eventually gets fired. But some last a few years. They have some success. It peters out. Some are very good, and have long runs. But to see of the 10 youngest coaches hired, there to be almost no middle ground, nothing resembling middle ground, franchise-altering type of stuff, or totally setting you back, fired in a mid-season, early on type stuff. Here's the list. So Sean McVay, here's the 10 youngest, the bottom four, the four success stories. Sean McVay with the Rams, obviously his tree, everything we know what that is going to be. John Gruden, when he was hired at the Raiders, was 34. Of course, you know, they had a couple of 8-8 seasons, and then they had two double-digit win seasons. Tuck rules, the only thing that kept them from probably making their run. And then he was poached by Tampa Bay and won a Super Bowl in his first year there. We know what John Gruden is. He was a great young coach. Bill Cowher was 34 when he was hired by the Steelers. 15 years, wins a Super Bowl, goes to another. Mike Tomlin was 34, hired by the Steelers. Wins a Super Bowl, goes to another. You know, he's now in his double-digit run there. Interesting, right? Replicating the Steelers is something that this team has been trying to do and philosophically trying to do in their giving Marvin Lewis a chance. I think the Marvin Lewis hire and the loyalty over the years was very much trying to replicate how the Steelers do things. And that is letting your coach be the coach for a long time and finding that guy who you think is going to be great for the next 10 to 15 years to lead your franchise. I think in a lot of ways, Zach Taylor is this team's swipe at Mike Tomlin and Bill Cowher. You buy that?
I'm not sure, because obviously the Steelers' blueprint is defense, run the ball, toughness. I don't know enough about Zach Taylor yet to know, but I do think it's obviously a buy early situation where you think this guy's a no-brainer head coach, probably would be a head coach by the time he's 38, and you get in early, you get him at 35.
if you think he is the guy for the next 10 years and maybe you wish you were getting him when he was 37 right. or had a couple late. More years or had become a coordinator, and but then you're not going to be able to hire him because you would have hired, let's say you hire Eric Bieniemy. Let's just play that out. You're not going to get Zach Taylor ever. And if you think he's the guy for the next 10 to 15 right. years that he's special, then you need to get him. You need to just go in early and get him now and just say, we're just going to let right. him do it and come in here.
And his interview must have been strong. If you're saying this guy needs to prove himself before he gets this job, that's like trying to buy stock in Tesla now.
Yeah.
You know, you missed the chance.
Yes.
Because if he goes and proves himself, it's over.
You have any Tesla stock?
I'm not going to comment about my portfolio at this time.
Does it include Tesla?
I wish.
It does not.
I wanted it to prove itself. I didn't get it.
Yeah. I have a friend who had the ability to buy in on the ground floor with Madtree. Like, knew the owners mm-hmm. and was like, they're like, hey, if you just put in this amount of money, you can be sort of like part of our ownership group and get a percentage.
Wow.
Because when they were kind of starting up and trying to really get it going when they were young brewers, and now they have this mega mansion place over on Madison Road, and everyone's sad they didn't buy in at that point.
Yeah, if you sit in on an interview with Zach Taylor and the way that you're describing him by people that knew him while he was at UC,
yeah,
you can feel that vision. You'd understand that this is a brewery that's one day going to be a mansion.
Yeah.
If that's what happened, and obviously if they are going to make this hire, that's what happened.
I have talked to multiple sources inside of the organization about him, and they all say he blew away the interview.
Right.
And that's not a surprise, which I'm glad you brought that up. I want to bring in a couple of guys that I talked to that worked with Zach Taylor at UC directly and he knew him really, really well there. This is just pieces of my conversation with them, phone conversations that I had with them over this weekend for BX, which you can go and read that at Cincinnati.com, of course. It was about how he resonated with those that knew him best and more of a look into his personality. So Doug Rossfeld, current coach at Moeller High School, and worked directly with Zach at UC as director of player development, and Vince Soriano, who was sort of in an assistant role and took on quarterbacks with Zach at UC as well. So here's the two of them, Rossfeld first, Vince second, talking a little bit about the connections and how he connected and how Zach Taylor was as a guy and kind of why that might correlate in the NFL.
And what were your first impressions of him?
The first thing you get out of Zach is that he's a brilliant football mind.
Yeah.
Is not just his knowledge of the game, but his firsthand experience applying that knowledge as a player, coaching at various organizations, his ability to teach it. I mean, my role down there had a lot to do with student instruction and player development. So I looked for those qualities in people that I worked with, and he was phenomenal with his position group, with his offense. I thought he treated people that he worked with like a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
His kindness and was matched only by his determination. I mean, he really, really is a great guy.
That seems to be I talked with Vince Soriano. I talked with him a little bit earlier too, and he said a lot of the same things. It's just he had a really unique way of connecting with people and not being, you know, overbearing it at all about it, and had being really, I guess, welcoming almost.
There's no question, but I think it's a unique quality that you can raise the level of conversation about football in a room and not have it be in a very hostile and aggressive way. I think that's a sign of a great coach is can you have the interactions that are meaningful and helpful for a player, and then also develop coaches and people around you and bring the best out of them as well.
Yeah, you guys obviously worked very closely together when you were there, right?
Yeah, we did, because I worked with the quarterbacks with him.
Yeah.
And it was funny, because I had worked with my first 3 years, I had helped first two at UC. I had helped Blake Rowland with the wide receiver, and then I helped Darren Henshaw with the quarterbacks my third year, because that was mostly what I had coached. And then when Darren and Eddie left, I wasn't sure, you know, going to stay or what Zach wanted me to do or whatever. And I, you know, I told him, I said, look, I don't know what you want me to do, if you want me to do anything. I said, I just wanted to know, and I'm making a decision whether I'm staying or retiring. And so about two, three days later, he came and goes, no, I've decided what I want you to do. I want you to work with me with the quarterbacks. You've been in that room with those kids for a whole year. You know them better than I know them.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, when we're, you know, I'll come when we're, you know, in a team period or group period or 7-on-7. He says, I'll coach the one under center. You coach the other two, you know, that are standing behind. He says, and then when we do drills, when we have to split the quarterbacks, you'll take one group, I'll take the other. So I was in every meeting with him.
Yeah.
You know, every meeting that he had, I was with him. So, I got to know him pretty well.
That's great. What was your initial impression? Did he come off as a guy who you would say, man, this guy is going to be somebody? Does that strike you? Or?
What came across is, one, he was very smart, very football knowledgeable, a very good communicator and teacher. I would say, Paul, very engaging. When he's in a meeting, you're involved, like you're involved in the meeting. It's not all about him just lecturing. And that was the thing in the quarterback meetings, where he would teach something, and then after he taught a concept, he would flip the marker to Hayden Moore and say, okay, Hayden, get up there and I want you to teach me this route. And it wasn't the exact route that he had just taught. It might have been one from yesterday.
Yeah.
And then Hayden would have to teach it, and he would see what he knew. And they were, you know, the kids were always engaged in his meeting. And I really liked that. I really liked how he did that. Because that way, you know, you're just not spouting out information.
Yeah.
But he's really extremely knowledgeable. It was interesting how he taught us the offense. I remember he would teach us the concept on the board, and then, you know, obviously with video today, you can do so much more. Then we would basically watch that concept that he had just taught us. He would show us the Dolphins doing it. He would show us the Patriots doing it, the Denver Broncos, and the Indianapolis Colts, the four main that we watched. And then he would tell us in our mind, okay, you know, like for me, and if you were the quarterback, where would you guys go with the ball based on this coverage, what I've taught you. So it was really a good way of learning. His personality, he's not a really big ego person.
Yeah.
Just he tries to get people involved in what's going on and, you know, make everybody a part of it.
So there's a little insight into the personality of Zach. Just really interesting stuff from those guys. You know, talking with Doug, who, you know, when you're a grad and coaching at Muller High School, you're a smart guy. It's just the truth. Do you ever get sick of you get sick of that, right? I don't. I'm not ever going to stop doing it, but
no, I really enjoy it. I like it whenever people identify and have pride and go back and still, you know, associate with their high school.
Dude, I'll shout out St. Susanna right now. I'll go grade school on you. I don't care.
So let's talk. All started.
Dude, St. Susie's, baby. That's me. Go Titans, right? All day.
Man, that's so Cincinnati.
You just, thank you so much. Yeah. And if you're not listening to That So Cincinnati, you're missing out. Myself, Jason Williams, we've had all kinds of guests on. I'm excited because I'm actually going to have some local Cincinnati rappers, hip-hop act named Tribe with 3 I's. They are hip-hop, and they're killing it. Their live show has been killing it locally. I think City Beat gave them New Artist of the Year. But they're like hip-hop activists. They do all kinds of stuff. Like, they try to use it as a platform to like help out Cincinnati.
Nice.
They're really awesome. Anyway, I'm gonna have them on, and hopefully they'll cut a verse. Maybe I can hop in the booth.
You can get in there. That's
yeah,
right.
No, I'm trying to get in there.
That's right.
I just want to have one song where I'm featured. You know what I mean?
Well, like, what is your? It would it say like
featuring
PDJ?
Featuring PDJ. That's fine.
Yeah, that's cool.
Use my Hotmail. use my Hotmail account, which back in the day, P Diddy, you know, back when P Diddy was kind of a thing, I had my first email address. I can't say it out loud because it's I don't mind. It's where all my trash goes. Everybody has that first email address that you now give to everybody every time you sign up for a credit card or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this one was, but it featured the word. It featured P Diddy in it, so I could use my old Hotmail address as my rapper name.
My first Hotmail was FletchDog_511
at Hotmail. Still working?
No.
Oh, FletchDog_511 at Hotmail.
I send that email out. I don't know. It'll just float around in the air somewhere.
Where does it go?
Where do they go?
Where do they go? Not to you.
That was 2 G's on the dog.
Dude, can people... This is a good one for everybody that loves the BBP because we've done all these things. We had tandem bike photos. Mm-hmm. We had the videos. We had hashtag find Paul's phone.
That was a successful.
Was a success. Shout out to everybody that was in on that. And trust me, your questions. If I see hashtag find Paul's phone and one of my BBP questions coming up here, you're going to the front of the line. I feel that it send us tweet at us what your first Hotmail name was. That's what I want, because I was a P. Did. I'm not going to put the whole thing out there because I still do get it, and I need to see that trash in a very orderly fashion. But P. Did. I'll say this. It was P. Did, Ohio.
I see.
In some form or fashion.
Okay. Because
I was referencing where I went to school. You were FletchDog.
FletchDog_511.
The dreaded underscore, which probably got so many emails like lost in the ether.
Yeah, exactly.
Because no one sees the underscore. It gets underlined and lost. Underscores are awful. Anyway, send us, tweet at us, at Paul Danner Jr., at Fletcher Page. What was your first Hotmail
this is gonna
email
be good.
Name? I like that. Everybody's got a funny one. All right. Let's go on. Okay, let's talk a little bit about things learned this weekend in through the Bengals' eye goggles, if you will. And then we'll talk about that, and then we'll get to Andy Benoit. What was your major takeaway of watching the games? And let's focus on the Rams game first of all.
All right. My funny takeaway was that I feel like C.J. Anderson is one of those guys that gives like old – if you were good in high school at football and you watch C.J. Anderson in the playoffs doing what he did, you think, maybe I could still do something like
maybe
that.
Maybe I could do it.
Shaped in such a way that it feels like – because the new – you know, the running backs of today are just, you know, they're built a certain way.
Adonis.
Everybody's got their fitness on. And I feel like I could bump into C.J. Anderson at Dunkin' Donuts getting his fill.
C.J. and Mike Tolbert sitting together,
that's right.
Just
hammering it out.
And then
putting the helmet on and doing their thing. That guy makes you feel like you don't got to be so special.
It looks like they did pull him off a playground.
Yeah.
And he was cut by 4 teams, so maybe he was like trying out for the AAF. He was going to be part of the American Alliance of Football. He was going to play for Brad Childress. And then was like, he said, no, I'm not going to come play for you. And then Brad quit. And they were like, all right, we're moving on.
Turns up here.
And it goes to my point. It goes to the point I think everyone has. This proves about the overvaluing of running backs. Are running backs important? Of course they are. They handle the ball a lot. They're important. But scheme, offensive line, far more important than who your running back is. This has been the case for so long. Look. Todd Gurley has been great. Le'Veon Bell is great. So many of these running backs are great. But when you see time and again the replacement come in and be just as effective, it proves to you your investments need to be up front. You need to understand scheme. You need to have guys that fit what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having the top guy, it goes back to Saquon Barkley. You know, where are the Giants at? Right? Like, congratulations. You drafted a generational running back. There's a lot of running backs drafted. Philip Lindsay, they could have had at any point and put him in there and had Sam Darnold. What team is better? You know, you focus on your quarterback, focus on building your offensive line, and you've got something.
Right.
And there are so many running backs that can be had. And when I talk about let's compare – you know, the Bengals are not going to set up to be exactly like the Rams. It's, you know, it's not like that's Zach Taylor's background, is he's the Rams, going to bring the Rams. But, you know, you have to understand how to use your personnel within the way things go now. Tell me what can be so different outside of the Bengals needing to continue to build up that offensive line between the Rams, what the Rams are doing in the personnel that they have and who the Bengals have. A.J. Green is better than any receiver they have. Joe Mixon is just along the same lines as Todd Gurley. There's no reason they can't do the exact same thing. You know, receiver Tyler Boyd is just as good as anybody that they throw out there on the other side opposite. I would take AJ Green and Tyler Boyd over almost
any
tandem in the playoffs, Michael Thomas and Ted Ginn.
What if you turn it into a trio? You have Mixon at running back and then Boyd and Green as your wide receivers.
Maybe New Orleans
is probably a –
I mean, you need the tight end. I mean, that's a position that we're going to be talking a lot about over the next month plus as they address all of their tight ends being free agents. And we can get into that. But
it's just the offensive line. That's where
I think you've got Cordy Glenn. I mean, he's not Andrew Whitworth, who, by the way, was moving folks on Saturday night. He wanted that playoff win. Congrats to Whit.
You just stole one of my things that I was going to shout out
to.
That's all right. I'm glad we touched on it.
Go ahead.
Man, Witt still got it.
There is no doubt. I mean, the fourth and goal play, this tells you about who a team thinks they are. Fourth and goal, everything in the book says kick the field goal because otherwise you leave it a one-score game. But no, they want to go in and score the touchdown. They run it behind Witt, and Witt just – turns the defensive end and tosses him. And there was a play early in the game where he took a dude, threw him down, and just dove on him.
Yeah.
And it was right now about a 20-some yard run went behind him. Man, Witt was just in destruction mode looking for that first playoff win.
And to that point about fourth down, we saw Andy Reid going for fourth downs a couple times. Yeah. The Saints went for it on fourth down, had a fake punt. I love that aggression, man. You got to go.
You got to have it. I mean, that's what today's NFL is.
And that was my larger point is just how much I know there's always a chess game involved, but how much possessions matter in terms of the Saints just wore down Philadelphia's defense in that second half. They had time possession. And whenever you got a quarterback like Drew Brees who's able to just dagger you on a third and seven, I mean, it's just demoralizing.
Yeah.
These offenses they're sexy. We talk about them in such a way as if they're like this dynamic, high-flying, whatever. But whenever you're running the ball on first, second down, it just wears down defenses.
When you're running it effectively.
I
mean, look at that. I mean, everyone makes such a big deal out of the passing game. And obviously, these are the top four. The teams left are the top four teams in the NFL in pass efficiency. Whether you're talking about DVOA, you're talking about yards per attempt. They're the best four teams for passing the ball. Obviously, that matters. I think yards per attempt, and, you know, if you really want to be a stat head, I think adjusted net yards per attempt is the most important stat in the NFL as far as correlating to success, and these teams are great at it. There's no doubt about it. That is a centerpiece. But there's a lot of teams that are very good at throwing the ball. The teams that can do both, that can do what the Rams did on Saturday night, that can line up and just blow you away and run the football the way the Saints went from Drew Brees throwing for 5,000 yards to actually winning a ton of games when they shifted the onus to Kamara and Mark Ingram. Seattle this year made their charge when they just decided we're going to run the ball. Seattle in recent years, riding Marshawn Lynch. We go through all of these teams. It's so much a passing league. No one is denying it's a passing league. But being able to run the ball and hammer it efficiently is the real difference between good and great offenses.
Exactly. And then if you've got a guy like Drew Brees, like I said, that can bail you out on third and longs, it's just – it's impressive to watch.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. It's to me, those are some of the biggest takeaways from this weekend. So now the Bengals wait another week. And we will see. So if the Rams win at the Saints on Sunday, they obviously would go to the Super Bowl. So it will then be schedule the press conference for essentially the Monday or Tuesday after the Super Bowl for Zach Taylor's introduction, and the full staff will probably all come in place at that point. And we'll see everything that if they lose to the Saints, likely we will see what, but that's right as the Senior Bowl goes on. So I don't know if they'll go directly to the Senior Bowl. Regardless, Fletcher will be in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. I will be here on the home front. We'll kind of have both of those taken care of for you for anything that happens here at home versus things that if anything goes down in Mobile. But regardless, then they'll start and make everything official with Zach Taylor then and get the whole staff in place and get it moving.
You got a pick for that New Orleans-Los Angeles clash of offensive titans?
I like the Rams. I think the Rams have been more complete. Some of the Rams' defensive personalities worry me. Marcus Peters,
are you talking about a certain cornerback?
Both of them. Mm-hmm. They are loose cannons, man. And I feel like you get into a high-pressure cooker like the Superdome will be, worry about something popping off and costing them, whether it be a penalty or a fight or just losing their cool in the course of a play or a game or whatever. I mean, those guys worry me a little bit. Aaron Donald's so dominant up front, it can really change things. And I think their offense has been more consistently dynamic. New Orleans over the last month and a half has been so good, but they've had these spells where they just are slow, whether it's the first half of a game or like we saw when the Eagles jumped out 14-0, where the Rams have just been go, it seems like, for a long time now on offense.
Yeah, I like the Rams too.
Rams, the Superdome is a tough joint to go get a win.
Yeah, I'm seeing Rams Patriots.
I don't think the Patriots are going to go into. There's two things at play here: Andy Reid's ability to lose in the playoffs,
right?
But there's a little bit of,
it's unparalleled.
Here's another thing I want to talk about. This is important, Bengals fans. Listen to me here. What happened last year? What were the results of the playoffs last year?
For Andy Reid?
For, in general, who won the Super Bowl? The Philadelphia Eagles, right?
Over the Patriots.
Had the Philadelphia Eagles ever won a Super Bowl?
They hadn't.
They had not. They were a tortured NFL franchise without much success, had never won a Super Bowl before, and
their MVP-caliber starting quarterback was injured.
But there was just really something that you just wouldn't believe. There's something that just breaks the mold, right? That was last year. That should sound familiar to some Bengals fans, being never won anything, a tortured NFL franchise, yada, yada, yada. The Kansas City Chiefs had a drought of epic proportions. They were 1-10 in their last 11 playoff games. They hadn't won a home playoff game since Joe Montana was their quarterback. This is Bengalian type of drought stuff. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes comes in. They get this whole mojo going. And the pass just don't mean crap when you really get out there and play in the games.
Yeah, I have a pet peeve about that when you got to bring up the past, talking about the 90s and stuff.
For fans here and for the community and all of those outside, absolutely, that is a huge part of what this franchise deals with on a daily basis. But for players, and particularly when the league is so young and these teams are so young, these kids don't know anything or care about anything that happened in the past or how long a drought is. Like that does not affect them when they get out there and just go play. And I think that has shown itself out now with the Eagles last year and what we've seen with Kansas City going and winning that game. And we'll see what happens with them at home. That Kansas City's been so good at home this year. New England has been very bad on the road compared to at home. I think New England's going to have a tough time. I don't think they're as good as they normally are. And I think Kansas City's going
to
go.
I would like to see Kansas City go ahead.
I just feel like stuff like that, Kansas City making it, L.A., Rams. I mean, think about the Rams under Jeff Fisher 3 years ago and who they were and how much of a joke they were. Think about Kansas City and how much a joke their playoffs failures have been. If you see Chiefs Rams, it should be more reason than ever for Bengals fans to know that the past is dumb and you can't get caught up in that. as much as it is a part of the fabric of the relationship between fans here and team, actual success on the field has very little to do with that. And that would be the fact that these two teams are in the Final Four is proving it.
Nobody's thinking about Joe Montana losing to the Buffalo Bills in 93 when when Tyreek Hill's running full speed with a lane off a reverse.
Yeah, right? No doubt. Absolutely no doubt. So I think that's an interesting thing, and for Bengals fans that want hope, and we want to give you hope.
That's right.
We don't want this to be a sad state of affairs. It's
supposed to be fun. It's
supposed to be fun. This can be fun. You can be one of these teams. You really can. I know you're all going to say, no, but the ownership. Look, bad ownership's the same in these two places as it was. It was a big part of the reason why they weren't winning crap. Okay? You get the right mix going, you get the right stuff going, and it can happen. It can happen to you. That's right. That's right. All right. That's a good place to end and bring in our guy, Andy Benoit. Writes for MMQB, does great stuff all the time. You have to be following him on Twitter, reading him in MMQB and Sports Illustrated. Great stuff. And more importantly, wrote an incredible story on Zach and Press Taylor in December on why they are the next big thing in coaching. So here is MMQB's Andy Benoit.
All right, now up on Bengals Beat Podcast is going back to one of our good friends of the pod, our buddy over at MMQB, Andy Benoit. How are we doing, Andy?
Paul, I'm doing real well. How are you? Now, am I going to see you at the Senior Bowl or Super Bowl or Combine or any of these upcoming events? Because I know we have a great time when we cross paths.
I know. I always enjoy the weird place that our conversations will inevitably go whenever we do meet up. So my partner Fletcher is taking the Senior Bowl. I will, of course, be at the Super Bowl and Combine and all those things. So I'm positive that we will be crossing paths very soon.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. I can't remember if I said this last time when I was on your podcast or not, but one of the really fun nights of my life and my professional life was you, myself, Will Brinson, Ben Volen. We went to that, it's now called Prime 47, but that fancy steakhouse in downtown Indianapolis. And remember, all the New York Giants bigwigs were there. It was the year they were in the Super Bowl. And then it was Jared from Subway, who we didn't know what he was at the time, but we thought, oh, that's pretty cool that he was eating dinner with Justin Tuck.
Yeah, yes. And Plaxico Burress showed up at one point.
Yes, he did. And that's when the evening got a lot of fun. The play on words, you were great at it. I remember that.
Yes. That was quite a night. Anytime you come across Jared from Subway back in those days, of course, when he was less controversial, was always a good time. I had kind of partially forgot about that. That was a good one. Let's talk a little bit about. I want to you wrote a piece in December on Zach and Press Taylor for MMQB. It was phenomenal. Loved the story, and it really went in depth into the two of them and their history and why they are what the headline dubbed them, coaching's next big thing. So I'll ask you that. Why are Zach and Press Taylor coaching's next big thing?
Yeah, they both have the air about them. I think they have a chance to be the next Harbaughs or Grudens or whatever coaching tandem you want to dial up. But they both have a presence and a really wide understanding of the game. It's that they're quarterbacks coaches right now. Of course, Zach is Jared Goff's QB coach, and then Press happens to be Carson Wentz's QB coach. But they see the game through the bigger lens, and you can kind of get a sense of who can do that and who doesn't as you get to spend time with coaches and know them. Zach is really praised for his what Sean McVay calls his emotional IQ, his emotional intelligence. That's probably his strongest suit, the ability to relate to people. Press, what I've always been most impressed about with him is he can take a small point and give you an understanding of how that small point applies to the bigger picture. So every small point also carries a big point with it, and there's just a cohesiveness of everything he says. So I like those guys a lot. They've got the right demeanor to be successful, and I think they're going to be very successful for a long time.
You know, you mentioned the Grudens. You mentioned the Harbaughs. Interesting things about them is, for the most part, they haven't coached together. You get a sense that there was any desire for them to coach together, or is there a sense of, hey, let's kind of go out on our own path? People obviously wonder, because as soon as Zach Taylor, you say he's going to probably be the coach of the Bengals, is he going to bring Preston?
Yeah, and my guess, I have not asked them that. They would tell me, they'd probably tell me off the record if I asked them, but my guess, knowing them the way I do, is they are not going to want to do that, at least not at this stage of their career. Obviously Zach has skyrocketed, and Press is climbing the ladder very quickly in Philadelphia, and he's in a really good situation there, getting to be around Doug Peterson, getting to coach some really quality quarterbacks. I think he's happy with where he is, and he has every reason to be. And I bet you Zach wouldn't want to pull Press out of that situation. So I would be surprised if it goes in that direction. The other thing is Zach probably needs to surround himself with experienced assistants as much as possible, because he is so young and he has risen so quickly these last couple years. It's been even a few years since he's called plays. So the more experience around him in those meetings, the better. And I guarantee you, working with Sean McVay, he has picked up on the significance of having a good, solid, open, experienced staff around him.
Yeah. What in the course of doing this piece, I mean, did anything – because you knew them well. I mean, you came up with the idea to do this story for a reason, so it's not like it came out of nowhere. But did anything surprise you over the course of that as you dug deeper with these two guys?
That's a good question. I think the one thing that surprised me a little bit is neither of them, they were both more than happy to do the piece. Neither of them was overly eager to do the piece, because coaches, a lot of times the good ones, don't want to come across as self-promoters. So even though Preston and I have had a rapport, I still had to go through the Eagles and do the main channels with that. And Press did it only when he got Doug Peterson's blessing. And then the Eagles said, well, look, we politely request that you don't make this about his future or him as a rising star. He doesn't want that. He's mostly wanting to do it to talk about his brother. And Zach was kind of the same. Zach was largely the same way. Zach is a little bit different, because McVay was pushing hard when I told Sean I was thinking of doing the piece. He really implored me to do it sooner than later and said, this guy deserves it. You're going to look good doing it. This is a really good coach. So I guess it just surprised me the way it came about a little bit. Ultimately, everybody got what they wanted, and everybody wanted this to be done. But both of these brothers were in it for the other one more than they were in it for themselves, for sure.
Yeah, which is kind of telling of who they are maybe a little bit as well. You mentioned Sean McVay. What do you make of the McVay tree and the league that we're in, and how a guy like Zach Taylor, or even, to a lesser extent, Matt LaFleur, Cliff Kingsbury, can come to be right now, and their chances of succeeding? Because through this idea, the idea of replicating Sean McVay seems kind of like a crazy thought. He's kind of a cyborg a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, it's interesting, Paul, because he's only in his second year, so we haven't seen a coach, A, this young, and B, have a coaching tree by his second season. And he's got a tree now. I mean, he's got two guys out there who are already head coaches, and some of his other assistants have scattered and moved around and gone, climbed up some ladders. So McVay's got a very unique personality for the job. He's just wired like a natural leader, not saying these other guys aren't. But we'll find out that you're not going to, just because you hired Zach Taylor, you're getting the next Sean McVay, because Taylor happened to sit in a room for a few years with him. It's not going to work exactly that way. Taylor's going to have to bring his own self to the table, just like Matt LaFleur is going to have to bring himself to the table. And I'm really eager to see how it goes. Matt Nagy is the other one that I think has pushed us over the top, not just because he's a young coach like McVay who's had success offensively, but Matt Nagy didn't call plays in Kansas City until the second half of last season. So that's another guy with a meteoric rise, and he did so well. Arguably, his season in Chicago was better than McVay's first season in L.A., you could even say. I mean, that's a discussion. So it's Matt Nagy and Sean McVay that are changing the landscape of the NFL for at least right now.
Yeah, There is no doubt about that. And the Bengals amongst the teams that are the latest to bring him on. You know, with eight coaching openings, we know the four teams that are left are arguably the four best offensive teams in football. And with eight coaching openings available, pretty much all of them, the six of the eight are going to go to offensive minds, a lot of those young offensive minds. There is no secret the league that we're in these days.
Absolutely not. And this stuff goes in cycles, too. People are getting pretty excited about, oh, boy, what this means for football. They're getting carried away. I believe it's 20 offensive coaches now and 12 defensive-minded head coaches I've read. And that might seem like a huge discrepancy. But remember, if you take one away from the other, you add it in. So if you have 19 offensive coaches, you got 13 defensive coaches. So it's not as lopsided as it seems. Right now, there are about four to five more offensive coaches than defensive coaches if we're weighing the balance of the scales.
Yeah, it can very quickly go back the other way before you know it. It only takes one hiring cycle going the other way, and it's right back even again. We'll see how the cycle plays out.
Right. Yeah, remember Mike Tomlin had a bunch of success as a young guy in his mid-30s with the Steelers, all of a sudden a bunch of defensive backs coaches started getting head coaching interviews.
Yep, because guess what? If Cliff Kingsbury and even Zach Taylor or Matt LaFleur, any of these guys, you see a majority of them not do well, you're going to see the exact opposite happening. It'll go back the other way. It's just the league does cycle itself. Andy, I appreciate you taking out some time to chat. I look forward potentially another night with drinks and some jokes at the combine. We'll see you there.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
All right. Much thanks to Andy Benoit for joining. Just great insight there. Always love talking football with Andy, and particularly about the new Bengals, soon to be pegged potential front running candidate head coach, aka head coach Zach Taylor. All right, let's question time. The Twitters have responded, and we've got a few. I picked six. Pick six.
That's nice.
Big six. That's a thing. We can do that. So let's run through here from Lee TCB. He's taking care of business. In Virginia, Lee TCB VA, right? That's what it is. That's how I take that. He's Lee taking care of business in Virginia.
That's a good Hotmail name.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah. Maybe that's where that started. Do you see John Ross progressing under our new head coach? I would hope so.
Have to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's got to be a big part of. I have talked a lot about John Ross because, you know, when you have so many other great options that you could have taken there. People like to go back to it and bring it up. And he's a huge part of this team being very well-rounded on offense. I think it's okay that somebody can be two things at once. Underperforming and not being as good as you hoped he would be at this point. Also, being used incorrectly.
Yes.
And or maybe not incorrectly, but not using to his strengths.
Dude, 7 of his 21 catches this year were for touchdowns.
Yes.
Which I think speaks to the way they used him near the goal line. I mean, his speed and quickness is almost...
They clearly understood how to use him
down
there.
But, you know, 20 to 20...
They seem to not know what to do
right
with him. Or maybe he's ineffective down there, and I think it's up to Zach Taylor and the new staff to really understand. And I will say, John Ross was drafted as a this is what the NFL is now type of guy. And I do think that he went to a staff that doesn't understand what the NFL is now type of staff. And that's why that staff is gone. And that's why you would hire someone who's 35. And, you know, the likes of Tyreek Hill and Brandon Cooks and all these guys that we talk about and we're watching all across the league, these types of guys are the types of guys that new NFL offenses want. They need and understand how to use. And you have to feel that Zach Taylor does or will as a brilliant offensive mind, as he's so often referred to. You would hope so. That would be one thing that should be right in his wheelhouse.
Exactly. And I think what you said is right. I think both things are true about him.
They do need to get more out of him. And he needs to be more consistent. And he needs to be less in his own head all the time. However, they need to understand how to use him better inside the 20s, and I think maybe that's the next step for him. You would like to see him running free deep more often. You can't tell me that he can't do that.
I've never heard a draft analyst be like, this guy's so good when there's not a lot of space.
Yeah.
And that's what he was this year.
There's though. No way. I would understand it if John Ross was not catching balls when they were thrown to him deep often. But there's no way a guy that runs as fast as he does can't be schemed up to have space to just outrun mm-hmm. people. And we just don't see that. So that I think that absolutely you would think that John Ross in particular, boy, how high did he jump in the air in happiness when they moved on from Marvin Lewis? I mean, John Ross lived in Marv's doghouse.
Mm-hmm.
He has got to be liking this because this does seem to play. I would say if there's one person, primary beneficiary, he would be near the top of the list. Okay, from Joey Meza, J.L. Meza Jr. I love me a junior. As a junior myself, shout out all juniors. Chances a quarterback drafted round one.
Well, I could just run through the names real quick. I mean, it'd have to be Dwayne Haskins. I this draft.
Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray's on there. Drew Locke. Daniel Jones from Duke. I think it's Haskins or.
I don't think Haskins will be there. And he won't be there. I don't see them. I mean, maybe they would move up.
So then we're talking about what is going to be there in the second and third rounds.
Yeah. Or. Yes, if you're talking about taking quarterback.
If you're talking about taking a quarterback that you for the future.
And I absolutely do feel like they're interested in that.
There are a lot of names in that tier, I think, that are viable.
I think they're interested in the quarterback of the next generation, and I think you can see by those quarterbacks that were playing this weekend, QBs on their rookie contracts are invaluable. Andy Dalton's contract will be expensive come the year 2021. So they need to have a guy ready to go by 2021. Mm-hmm. I would think that if you're really looking at the economics of it and the value in Andy Dalton is his talent level and his contract as a combo, because you can build around him. Or you go find your Patrick Mahomes, right? You go find that guy that you're willing to let develop for a year. So either this draft or next draft, you need to go find your Patrick Mahomes if that's where you're going. And I do believe there's a desire to do that, or they would not have been kicking the tires on other quarterbacks the way they have the last few years. So is that in play? Sure. Especially with a new head coach who hasn't stood on the table for Andy Dalton the entire time. I like Andy. I've been called this, and I'll call myself an Andy apologist. That's fine. I think he's way better than people give him credit for, and that's fine that people disagree with me or whatever. And even saying that, I mean, there's no doubt that everyone should be interested in finding the next Patrick Mahomes if they don't already have it. How can you watch this league and not say that? You know. So I feel like that is certainly in play, but they have so many needs, and mm-hmm. It's got to hit you just right, and they've got to feel like they have that guy.
It's got to be the guy you want. The question said first round, right? I think if Haskins isn't going to be there,
then there probably then isn't that guy.
And then there's not that guy.
Yeah, probably not. But I don't know that Haskins would make it that far, but I guess we'll find out. We have plenty of time to talk about quarterbacks in the draft and mm-hmm. mock drafts and all these things.
And it's a stronger quarterback class next year.
Correct. Let's talk about, I mean, shoot, look at what's going to be coming forth. I mean, everyone's going to start trying to do a two-year suck plan to get Trevor Lawrence.
You got Tua.
Next year.
Trevor Lawrence the next year after that.
The Oregon kid.
Oregon kid, Jacob Eason at Washington will probably
Jake
just
Fromm.
Start. I'm not sold on him.
He's your boy.
As a starter or as an NFL starter.
Right.
But
I'm just saying.
Still, he's there.
Tua will probably go number one overall. Trevor Lawrence will go number one overall in 2021. So the Bengals either need to really suck. I did enjoy everyone that tweeted that that's why they should hire Hugh Jackson. Make Hugh
For
Jackson
For that Trevor
tank,
Lawrence plan.
Tank. He clearly knows how to do that.
Yeah. Hey, it worked out.
He got it.
He just didn't. He didn't last
did,
long enough.
He did what he was there to do.
But see, that's the thing. I mean, Cincinnati's not going to be drafting high enough, I don't believe, for like Tua. But I do think it's a deeper class next year, and we can talk about that later.
Yeah. From our guy James Willis. Like James, you know why? Because he is a college graduate of OU.
There you go.
Best school in Ohio. How would you fix the O-line? I mean, I would play Christian Westerman, and I would draft a right tackle in with the number 11 overall pick.
I think a right tackle really changes everything.
Look, Billy Price in year two, I'm down with.
Cordy will be fine at left tackle.
Cordy is a fine left tackle. He is not the greatest, but he's a road grader. He's more than serviceable.
And when healthy.
He's a B. Yeah. He's a B left tackle.
Yeah.
Go get a first-round pick at right tackle. Now you've got bookends. Play Westerman. Maybe even draft a right guard somewhere in the middle, or go get somebody. You know, Clint Bowling's future. Clint, we've talked about this before. He could be a cap casualty if the team decided to move and get younger and play Westerman at left guard. I would certainly be interested in ditching the Alex Redmond project, but they seem to – Frank Pollock has been a believer in him. To me, fixing it really is, to me, and this is a good draft for where you can get a right tackle, I would be very interested in using number 11 overall on a right tackle, and I feel great about the offensive line at that
point.
Yeah,
same here.
So, and if you want to add a free agent guard, okay, I feel like you would be overpaying there, and I don't know that they're going to be willing to go that direction. As a transition, over to James W 513, rep to 513. Thank you for following and asking questions. Any chance our approach to free agency will change with our new coach? Will the front office let them be more aggressive? I think that there is a possibility. That's something I've heard talked about inside of the building on occasion is the obvious need to do that, and that's recognized. That has never been part of Duke Tobin's philosophy, but I also think I do know. I mean, I remember, I'll never forget when we had Marvin on Beyond the Stripes in our early years at BTS, which had to have been like 2014 or so, and asked him what the most overrated part of the entire NFL is. And that I even brought up, it could also include press conferences give him an out. And he said, no, free agency and the hubbub over free agency and how ineffective it really is. And I actually agree with the Bengals' philosophy on that.
Yeah.
Sort of. Not to the extent that they do. I think that willingness to pluck one or two guys at good value is necessary to fill gaps and help you when you whiff a little bit in the draft or cover you on some of these drafts that don't hit just right. And I don't think that they've really had that. They've shown doubling down on their guys that they pick, and a lot of free agents, guys that they are familiar with, and rather than going more off of how they've played in the league. So I think that will be part of the equation here. But until we really get in here and talk to Zach, which we haven't been able to do, it's really hard to know that. But I could see, you know, all these young GMs, young coaches, there's a much more of a wheeler-dealer approach to the right. NFL and roster construction.
You know, we saw Green Bay kind of switch their philosophy a little bit. They went free agent crazy. You know, with what Jimmy Graham and a couple other guys.
Yeah, compared to what they were, which they were the Bengals. Yeah.
And it completely backfired, blew up in their face. So that's not a cautionary tale for why they should continue not doing it. But it's like you said, like you just can't be so rigid. If you've got a position of need, you find a guy at great value, well, yeah, then you're going to use a free agency spot there. So,
yeah, and last year we saw a little bit of that. I mean, it was a trade for Cordy Glenn. But it was willingness to bring in someone from the outside to fill a hole and pay him $11 million. So while that doesn't fall under free agency, it sort of is. I mean, it is plucking somebody that was on another team and putting him in yours.
Or pressing
the problem around. The problem is there is free agency, you are overpaying. And this
every
team
time,
wants
yeah.
value. They don't want to overpay for anything. And I don't blame them on that because they feel like that's how they get the most value in an entire out of an entire roster, the most depth of roster, is not overpaying for people or positions. So I get – and free agency is nothing but overpaying. Finding value yeah. there is very hard to do. You're going to be what they have been, second, third wave guys.
Right. Or you go out and get a guy like Preston Brown at a position of need, and he the whole season he's injured. I mean, mm-hmm. there's nothing they could have done about that.
Yeah. That stuff does happen. Okay, let's go to our guy at Buddhist David, fresh out of Canada. He says, do you think the window is closing on A.J. Green and Andy Dalton?
It is because, like you've laid out, I mean, there's a pretty defined window for Andy given the contract that they have with him. And
yeah, I think A.J., Getting into his early to mid 30s by the end of Andy's contract. Andy and his contract coming up last year for AJ Green.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how that negotiation will go. A very interesting negotiation, by the way.
Yeah.
Paying star receivers into their 30s. But the idea of possibly being a Hall of Famer when the Bengals don't have any, he's the pride of your franchise. An interesting negotiation that will come up here in August. You're paying Tyler Boyd. All these things. But yeah, I think certainly there's no doubt. Not as much for Andy. Andy's window is another 5-10 years. I mean, he's a mm-hmm. quarterback. You can play in your 30s. Hell, your 40s. Receivers, different ball game. Whole different ball game. But we don't know that Andy's future will be here.
Right.
Okay. Last one from our guy, David Brooks. Shout out NKU grad. All right. What if the head coach, after all of this, is Marvin Lewis? That would be such a WWE thing to do. Totally. I have been so on board for this. Well, here is the thing. So it all comes back to the same thing of, look, if you – the Bengals are striking out at defensive coordinator. They want someone who's been a head coach, who is strong. I know somebody.
Oh, my gosh.
Who could be a defensive coordinator.
I think that's Marvin's music.
That's Marvin Lewis's music. Oh, my God. That's Marvin's music.
What a turn.
He brought the damn brass knucks. The damn brass knucks. Marvin Lewis is back. That's it. Marvin comes back as Zach Taylor's DC. And away we go. I just for the sheer intense outrage, I want it. For entertainment value alone, I want it.
Best day on Twitter ever would be that moment.
Oh, there's been some good ones. I don't know. The day that Hugh came back.
Yeah, that was fun.
Hard to top that one. Hard to top that one as far as Bengals Twitter giving back to the community. Okay, thank you to everybody for your questions. As always, we try to get to as many as we can. It is time for Today in Kanye. Fletcher?
Kanye West pulled out of Coachella because the festival wouldn't build him a giant dome. It's true. He was supposed to headline. He backed out.
He wanted a dome?
Yeah, and there's no hard feelings. The founder and the person that runs Coachella, he said that Kanye had a vision and it was going to be true art, but they just could not pull off his demands and that they hope to revisit it in future Coachella festivals.
Oh, my God. I would love to have been in that meeting. So it's all the Coachella people, Kanye and his absurd entourage sitting across from the table. Starts off, I want a dome. You want a what? I want you to build me a dome.
Well, he had already, he had the floating stage that he had mm-hmm. used on one tour, and he had some wild stuff on the Yeezus tour. So I'd just like to know what they thought he was going to say, And then they were like, they had a plan. They were ready for all these different things. And he goes, nope, I need a dome. We weren't ready for a dome.
We weren't ready for a dome. No. How big was the dome, you think?
It sounds like it was pretty big. Hopefully, the Los Angeles Rams are more prepared for a dome than Coachella.
Because that's something else. That would be kind of, the funniest part of that, maybe not as the original meeting, is the Coachella people trying to prep.
The pre-Kanye meeting.
The prep meeting. Okay, what do we think Kanye will ask for? I mean, who knows?
Exactly. Because he's played at Coachella before, and they've been able to meet his demands. So this time they struck out. And this means I'm not going to go to Coachella.
No dome. Because
if there's no Kanye and no dome, I'm not going to fly out there for that.
There's no Fletcher. There's no Fletchdog 511.
Underscore.
No! It went off into the ether.
That's right.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, man. All right. Anyway, thanks again, everybody, for sticking around to the end of the BVP. We love you. Thanks, everybody, for sending your questions. Thanks, everybody, for your in advance for your Hotmail email addresses. Tweet them to us. We're curious what some of y'all went with. Anyway, we're in the off season. Off. I use that in air quotes as it's pretty on right now. But we are in our weekly BVPs. No deuces, no walkouts. Only emergencies like we had on Friday. So we'll be tracking the defensive and offensive coordinator news, of course, very closely. And Fletcher will be on the ground at the Senior Bowl next week. So we'll be tracking that. We'll possibly be doing the over the internet pod next week because we won't be in person. And the week after that, I will be in Atlanta with Super Bowl stuff, possibly sitting down with Zach Taylor every day. So we may have plenty of stuff for you from the Super Bowl, especially if Zach Taylor is there. So, all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you next week on the BBP. Enjoy your 50 West. Drink them up. Talk to you later.